On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're listening to this morning's testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee by General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker as they report to the nation on the U.S. troop surge in Iraq. Listening in with us today from Washington is Stephen Biddle, Senior Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, former Professor of Security Studies at the Army War College, and former advisor to General Petraeus. Stephen Biddle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also with me here in the studio as we listen, Barry Posen, Director of Security Studies at MIT. The Senate hearings, Barry Posen, thank you for being
here. Good morning.
The Senate hearings began this morning with opening statements by Committee Chairman Senator Joe Biden, Democrat of Delaware, and Senator Richard Lugar, Republican from Indiana, and ranking member on the committee. Immediately following their remarks, we've had Ryan Crocker come in with his opening statement. It is practically the same to the word as his opening statement yesterday before the House committee, describing what he sees as progress in Iraq. Let's listen to just a little bit of that statement coming again today from Ryan Crocker.
I cannot guarantee success in Iraq. The challenges, as I have stated, are immense. I do believe, as I have described, that success is attainable. I am certain that abandoning or drastically curtailing our efforts will bring failure, and the consequences of such a failure must be clearly understood. An Iraq that falls into chaos or civil war will mean massive human suffering, well beyond what has already occurred within Iraq's borders. It could well invite the intervention of regional states, all of which see their future connected to Iraq's in some fundamental way. Undoubtedly, Iran would be a winner in such a scenario, consolidating its influence over Iraqi resources and possibly territory. The Iranian president has already announced that Iran will fill any vacuum in Iraq. In such an environment, the gains made against al-Qaeda and other extremist groups could easily evaporate, and they could establish strongholds to be used as safe havens for regional and international operations.
Ambassador Ryan Crocker testifying this morning before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in essentially verbatim a repeat of what he brought to the House yesterday. I want to take a moment, Stephen Biddle and Barry Posen, to listen back to some excerpts from opening statements in the Senate today by Joseph Biden and Richard Lugar. Joseph Biden, of course, Democrat of Delaware, running for the presidency and a critic of the war. Richard Lugar, very respected Republican senator from Indiana, longtime Senate leader in foreign relations who has been critical of the war and was again today. Let's listen for just a moment here to Joe Biden in his opening statement to General Petraeus and Ryan Crocker as they sat before the committee.
Ambassador Crocker, General Petraeus, the American military, as you know better than I do, cannot sustain a war in Iraq with no end in sight at the levels we're there now. And the American people will not support an infinite war whose sole remaining purpose is to prevent the situation in Iraq from becoming worse than it is today. It's time to turn the corner, in my view, gentlemen. We should stop the surge and start bringing our troops home. We should end a political strategy in Iraq that cannot succeed and begin one that can. I believe if we make these changes, we can still leave Iraq without leaving behind a civil war that turns into a regional war, endangering America's interests, not for a year or two, but for a generation.
Senator Joe Biden of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning addressing Crocker and Petraeus before their opening remarks, and he was tough. Republican Senator Richard Lugar opened up in a little more friendly tone, but also became very critical on the details, and particularly the details of the current strategy.
At this stage of the conflict, with our military strained by Iraq deployments, our global advantages being diminished by the weight of our burden in Iraq, it is not enough for the administration to counsel patience until the next milestone or the next report. We need to see a strategy for how our troops and other resources in Iraq might be employed to fundamentally change the equation.
tough opening statements from big senators on the committee this morning. General David Petraeus has now begun his opening statement. Let's listen and see if it is also the same as he gave to the House yesterday.
The surge are in large measure being met. In recent months, in the face of tough enemies and the brutal summer heat of Iraq, coalition and Iraqi security forces have achieved progress in the security arena. Though improvements have been uneven across Iraq, the overall number of security incidents in Iraq, for example, has declined in 8 of the past 12 weeks. During this time, ethno-sectarian violence has also been reduced, and the number of overall civilian deaths has declined, though both are clearly still at troubling levels. The progress is a result of many factors. Coalition and Iraqi forces have dealt significant blows to al-Qaeda Iraq and have disrupted Shia militia extremists. Additionally, in a very significant development, we and our Iraqi partners are being assisted by tribes and local citizens who are rejecting extremism and choosing to help secure Iraq. Iraqi security forces have also continued to grow and to shoulder more of the load, albeit slowly, and amid continuing concerns about the sectarian tendencies of some elements in their ranks. Based on all this and on the further progress we believe we can achieve over the next few months, I believe that we will be able to reduce our forces to the pre-surge level of brigade combat teams by next summer, withdrawing one quarter of our combat brigades by that time without jeopardizing the security gains that we have fought so hard to achieve. Beyond that, while noting that the situation in Iraq remains complex, difficult, and sometimes downright frustrating, I also believe that it is possible for us to achieve our objectives in Iraq over time, though doing so will be neither quick nor easy. Having provided that summary, I would like to review briefly the nature of the conflict in Iraq, recall the situation before the surge, describe the current situation, and explain the recommendations I have provided to my chain of command. The fundamental source of the conflict in Iraq is competition among ethnic and sectarian communities for power and resources. This competition will take place. The question is whether it is resolved more or less violently. This chart shows the security challenges in Iraq. And you have charts in front of you as well. Foreign and homegrown terrorists, insurgents, militia extremists, and criminals all push the ethno-sectarian competition toward violence. Malign actions by Syria, and especially by Iran, fuel that violence. And lack of adequate governmental capacity, lingering sectarian mistrust, and various forms of corruption add to the challenges. In January 2007, in response to the horrific ethno-sectarian violence that spiraled out of control in 2006, and to an assessment in December 2006 that we were failing to achieve our objectives, a surge of forces began flowing into Iraq, focusing on protecting the population and reducing sectarian violence, especially in Baghdad. In so doing, these forces have employed counterinsurgency practices, such as living among the people they are securing. In mid-June, with all the surge brigades in place, we launched a series of offensive operations in partnership with Iraqi security forces. These operations focused on expanding the gains achieved in the preceding months in Anbar province, pursuing al-Qaeda in the Diyala River Valley and several other areas, and clearing Bakuba, several key Baghdad neighborhoods.
General David Petraeus testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning in testimony very similar to what he brought to the House yesterday. We will listen to more right now as he goes through some of the details before he comes to his conclusions. I just want to turn to my two guests listening with me, Barry Posen and Stephen Biddle. Stephen Biddle, in summary, what do you see as emerging in yesterday's testimony in the Senate today as kind of the bottom line question here? Is there a question about how and whether the U.S. goes ahead, or are we basically being given a rationale for something that is a fait accompli?
Well, parts of it, I think, are closer to a fait accompli than other parts. For example, there's been much discussion of the whole question of withdrawal. And I think at this point, the fact that the surge brigades are going to leave, that the surge has a natural lifespan and it will subside as it built up, is pretty much a fait accompli. I see very little prospect that the administration is going to try to reverse that. So some kind of a reduction from 160,000 down to probably the 130,000 level that we held before the surge.
By next summer
is an item of consensus. I think everyone agrees that's going to happen. It may speed up a little or slow down a little, but it will certainly occur.
Stephen Biddle, hold that thought for a moment. Barry Posen, a change in troop levels or a change in strategy there?
There's no change in strategy here at all, as far as I can tell. And moreover, there's no change in the way they talk about their strategy, which is their huge elements of faith baked in this strategy, that somehow if you can get fighting down in Baghdad, that there will be some miraculous change in the attitudes of Iraqi political factions that will cause them to make and implement deals that thus far they've been neither willing to make nor implement.
So in this, Stephen Biddle, do you see General David Petraeus offering something beyond trust me and on we go? Is the progress persuasive to you?
Well, I think he's offering something other than just trust me, but I think Barry is exactly right that the withdrawal prospects people are talking about now are exactly what was planned when the surge began. I mean, this doesn't represent a change in plan or some sense that we can do things that we didn't think we could do before. So this is just very much the unfolding of the original plan for the surge that when the general says withdrawal.
Stephen Biddle, please stand by. Barry Posen, when we come back, more from General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are listening in on this morning's testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee by General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker. Stephen Biddle joins me, former U.S. Army War College professor now at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Barry Posen at MIT's Security Studies Program. Let's listen to General David Petraeus before the committee.
And in Baghdad, as shown, have been in the right direction. In any event, the overall trajectory in Iraq, a steady decline of incidents in the past 3 months, is still quite significant. The number of car bombings and suicide attacks has also declined in each of the past 5 months, from a high of some 175 in March, as this next chart shows, to about 90 this past month. While this trend has been heartening, the number of high-profile attacks is clearly still too high, and we continue to work hard to destroy the networks with our Iraqi counterparts that carry out these barbaric attacks. Our operations have produced substantial progress against al-Qaeda in Iraq. As this next chart shows, in the past 8 months, we have considerably reduced the areas in which al-Qaeda enjoyed sanctuary. We have also neutralized 5 important media cells, detained the senior Iraqi leader of al-Qaeda Iraq, and killed or captured nearly 100 other key leaders and some 2,500 rank-and-file fighters. Al-Qaeda Iraq is certainly not defeated. However, it is off balance, and we are pursuing its leaders and operators aggressively. Of note, these gains against al-Qaeda are a result of the synergy of actions by conventional forces, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance assets, and special operations elements. A combination of these assets is necessary to conduct effective operations against terrorist elements. In the past 6 months, we have also targeted Shia militia extremists, killing or capturing over 1,400 rank-and-file and senior leaders. It is increasingly apparent to both coalition and Iraqi leaders that Iran, through the use of the Iranian Republican Guard Corps Quds Force, seeks to turn the Shia militia extremists into a Hezbollah-like force to serve its interests and fight a proxy war against the Iraqi state and coalition forces in Iraq.
heckling in the committee room again today, as we heard yesterday. Security pulling away a white-haired man in a gray suit.
The most significant development in the past 6 months likely has been the increasing emergence of tribes and local citizens rejecting al-Qaeda and other extremists. The success in Anbar is an example of what can happen when local Iraqis decide to oppose al-Qaeda and reject its Taliban-like ideology and indiscriminate violence. While Anbar's model cannot be replicated everywhere in Iraq, it does demonstrate the dramatic change in security that is possible with the support and participation of local citizens. As this next chart shows, other tribes have been inspired by the actions of those in Anbar and have volunteered to fight extremists as well. Over 20,000 such individuals are already being hired for the Iraqi National Police or the Iraqi Police Service. Thousands of others are being assimilated into the Iraqi Army, and thousands more are vying for a spot in Iraq's security forces. As I noted earlier, Iraqi security forces have continued to grow, to develop their capabilities, and to shoulder more of the burden of providing security for their country. Despite concerns about sectarian influence, inadequate logistics and supporting institutions, and an insufficient number of qualified commissioned and non-commissioned officers, Iraqi units are engaged around the country. As this next chart shows, there are now nearly 140 Iraqi Army, National Police, and Special Operations Forces battalions in the fight, with about 95 of those capable of taking the lead in operations as judged by the operational readiness assessments, albeit with some coalition support. Although their qualitative development has not always kept pace with their quantitative growth, all of Iraq's battalions have been heavily involved in combat operations that often result in the loss of leaders, soldiers, and equipment. Despite the losses, a number of Iraqi units across Iraq now operate with minimal coalition assistance. In order to take over the security of their country, the Iraqis are rapidly expanding their security forces. In fact, they now have some 445,000 assigned to the Ministries of Interior and Defense Forces, and we believe they will be close to 480,000 by year's end. Significantly, in 2007, Iraq will, as in 2006, spend more on its security forces than it will receive in security assistance from the United States. In fact, Iraq is becoming one of the United States' larger foreign military sales customers, committing some $1.6 billion to FMS already, with the possibility of up to $1.8 billion more being committed before the end of this year. And I appreciate the attention that some members of Congress have recently given to speeding up the FMS process for Iraq. To summarize, the security situation in Iraq is improving, and Iraqi elements are slowly taking on more of the responsibility for protecting their citizens. Innumerable challenges lie ahead. However, coalition and Iraqi security forces have made progress toward achieving sustainable security. As a result, the United States will be in a position to reduce its forces in Iraq in the months ahead. 2 weeks ago, I provided recommendations for the way ahead in Iraq to the members of my chain of command and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The essence of the approach I recommended is captured in its title, Security While Transitioning, From Leading to Partnering to Overwatch. This approach seeks to build on the security improvements our troopers and our Iraqi counterparts have achieved in recent months. It reflects recognition of the importance of securing the population and the imperative of transitioning responsibilities to Iraqi institutions and Iraqi forces as quickly as possible, but without rushing to failure. It includes substantial support for the continuing development of Iraqi security forces. It also stresses the need to continue the counterinsurgency strategy that we have been employing, but with Iraqis gradually shouldering more of the load. And it highlights the importance of regional and global diplomatic approaches. Finally, in recognition of the fact that this war is not only being fought on the ground in Iraq, but also in cyberspace, it also notes the need to contest the enemy's growing use of that important medium to spread extremism. The recommendations I provided were informed by operational and strategic considerations. The operational considerations include recognition that military aspects of the surge have achieved progress and generated momentum. Iraqi security forces have slowly been shouldering more of the security burden. A mission focused on either population security or transition alone will not be adequate to achieve our objectives. Success against Al-Qaeda Iraq and Iranian-supported militia extremists requires conventional forces as well as special operations forces. And the security and local political situations will enable us to draw down the surge forces. My recommendations also took into account a number of strategic considerations. Political progress will only take place if sufficient security exists. Long-term, U.S. ground force viability will benefit from force reductions as the surge runs its course. Regional, global, and cyberspace initiatives are critical to success. And Iraqi leaders understandably want to assume greater sovereignty in their country, although, as they recently announced, they do desire a continued presence of coalition forces in Iraq in 2008 under a new UN Security Council resolution, and following that, they want to negotiate a long-term security agreement with the United States and other nations. Based on these considerations and having worked the battlefield geometry with Lieutenant General Ray Odierno, commander of the Multinational Corps Iraq, to ensure that we retain and build on the gains for which our troopers have fought, I have recommended a drawdown of the surge forces from Iraq. In fact, later this month, the Marine Expeditionary Unit deployed as part of the surge will depart Iraq. Beyond that, if my recommendations are approved, this will be followed by the withdrawal of a brigade combat team without replacement in mid-December, and the further redeployment without replacement of four additional brigade combat teams and two Marine battalions in the first 7 months of 2008 until we reach the pre-surge level of 15 brigade combat teams by mid-July 2008. Force reductions will continue beyond the pre-surge levels of brigade combat teams that we will reach by mid-July 2008. In my professional judgment, however, it would be premature to make recommendations on the pace of such reductions at this time. In fact, our experience in Iraq has repeatedly shown that projecting too far into the future is not just difficult, it can be misleading and even hazardous. In view of this, I do not believe it is reasonable to have an adequate appreciation for the pace of further reductions and mission adjustments beyond the summer of 2008 until about mid-March of next year. We will know later than that time, consider factors similar to those on which I base the current recommendations, having by then, of course, a better feel for the security situation, the improvements in the capabilities of our Iraqi counterparts, and the enemy situation. This final chart captures the recommendations I have described, showing the recommended reduction of brigade combat teams and illustrating the concept of our units adjusting their missions and transitioning responsibilities to Iraqis as the situation and Iraqi capabilities permit. It also reflects the no later than date for recommendations on force adjustments beyond next summer and provides a possible approach we have considered for the future force structure and mission set in Iraq. In describing the recommendations I have made, I should note again that, like Ambassador Crocker, I believe Iraq's problems will require a long-term effort. There are no easy answers or quick solutions. And though we both believe this effort can succeed, it will take time. Our assessments underscore, in fact, the importance of recognizing that a premature drawdown of our forces would likely have devastating consequences. That assessment is supported by the findings of a 16 August Defense Intelligence Agency report on the implications of a rapid withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. Summarizing it in an unclassified fashion, it concludes that a rapid withdrawal would result in the further release of the strong centrifugal forces in Iraq and produce a number of dangerous results, including a high risk of disintegration of the Iraqi security forces, rapid deterioration of local security initiatives, Al-Qaeda Iraq regaining lost ground and freedom of maneuver, a marked increase in violence and further ethno-sectarian displacement and refugee flows, alliances of convenience by Iraqi groups with internal and external forces to gain advantages over their rivals, an exacerbation of already challenging regional dynamics, especially with respect to Iran. Lieutenant General Odierno and I share this assessment and believe that the best way to secure our national interests and avoid an unfavorable outcome in Iraq is to continue to focus our operations on securing the Iraqi people while targeting terrorist groups and militia extremists, and as quickly as conditions are met, transitioning security tasks to Iraqi elements. Before closing, I want to thank you and your colleagues for your support of our men and women in uniform in Iraq. The soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen with whom I'm honored to serve are the best equipped and very likely the most professional force in our nation's history. All of us appreciate what you have done to ensure that these great troopers have had what they've needed to accomplish their mission, just as we appreciate what you have done to take care of their families, as they too have made significant sacrifices in recent years. The advances you have underwritten in weapons systems and individual equipment, in munitions and command control and communication systems, in intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities, and vehicles and counter-IED systems and programs, and in manned and unmanned aircraft have proven invaluable in Iraq.
General David Petraeus, wrapping up his opening remarks to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee with essentially the same message, nearly the same words that he delivered before House committee members yesterday. Barry Posen of MIT's Security Studies Program is with us, and Stephen Biddle, the Council on Foreign Relations, formerly at the U.S. Army War College, counseled David Petraeus in advance of this. Stephen Biddle, Richard Lugar, Senator, Republican, very tough in his opening statement, saying progress, U.S. progress, may be largely beside the point, that maybe like a farmer planting on a floodplain without considering that floodwaters will come. Do you hear progress articulated here of a lasting variety?
Well, certainly with respect to the original model that underlay the way the surge was rolled out in January, no. I think at this point there are two different models embodied in U.S. strategy for how, if we get lucky, we'll get out of this with something that looks like stability. And let me point out from the outset that I think this is a long shot gamble either way. I mean, the odds of success, I think, are down in the 1 in 10, 1 in 5 neighborhood. Sometimes a long shot gamble is the right thing to do anyway if you think the consequences of failure are grave enough.
Stephen Biddle, could you hold that right there? Let's listen to Joe Biden for just a second.
A neighborhood in Baghdad today without fear of being kidnapped or killed?
First of all, Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one comment about the GAO report, because one of the reasons for difference, frankly, is that they did have an earlier data cutoff. It's at least 5 weeks prior to our data cutoff, which runs until this past Friday. And the trends that have developed, in fact, have been, in many respects, confirmed by the data since that time. In some cases, there were earlier.
You're saying the five-week trends, the five-week difference confirms your data being correct. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is that the additional 5 weeks of data, their data is our data. I mean, everyone generally uses the same database. And they just, because of the requirement to submit their report, to go get back here and to write it and so forth, they had a data cutoff that was about 5 weeks before the data that I just showed you. And that does
Petraeus responding to Joe Biden here.
Because, again, the trend of a 12-week trend, the final 5 weeks have been pretty important. In some cases, we think the data cutoff may have been even earlier in their particular report.
Well, again, I don't want to get an argument about that, but if you look at your own chart, there have been at least four other occasions where there have been significant decreases in violence over a three-month period, and then it's shot back up. Yeah. 5 weeks in Iraq is a moment, as you know better than I do, General.
Well, this is 3 months, of course.
I understand that.
And, again, we are certainly watching it to see, and we're fighting, obviously.
We're still talking about 1,000, over 1,000 weekly attacks. 1,000, and we're calling that success. Granted, it is down from 1,680 or thereabouts, but 1,000 a week. But let me get directly to my question, and that is, can a Sunni Arab travel safely from a Sunni neighborhood in Baghdad into a Shia neighborhood in Baghdad?
It depends on the neighborhood, frankly, sir. There's no question but that...
We have to take a short break here on a tough
Sunni
question.
Arabs
of course, exactly that kind of travel, very
of
difficult in Baghdad. Senator Joe
Biden
questioning General David Petraeus. It looks as though it will be a long day for David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker, first before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Come right back to testimony from Capitol Hill. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're listening in on this morning's testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee by General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker. The committee chairman, Joe Biden, has just asked, how long might it be that the U.S. has to stick in Iraq? 6, 10, 11 years? More, he's asked. Ambassador Ryan Crocker is responding.
It would be. But you are seeing beyond next time. You're saying the process will not be quick. Are you talking about not quick, meaning a time frame of a year? Or are you talking about not quick being well beyond the end of next summer?
It could be well beyond the end of next summer. It certainly will be well beyond the end of next summer before Iraq can achieve the end state I've laid out. There's no question. What that implies for, you know, our presence, levels and so forth, that I can't judge.
Well, I have a minute and 16 seconds left. Let me suggest that the administration's policy from the outset has been to set up a democratic central government in Iraq that is trusted by the Iraqi people, that we will stand up an Iraqi army so our men and women can stand down and come home, and that the security forces that were added in this tactical ramp-up were designed in order to provide for the government to have breathing room to reach a political reconciliation. Is it not true that the fundamental purpose of the surge, the primary purpose, political settlement, has not been met at this point?
Sir, clearly we do not have a national-level political settlement. It also, I think, is in no way reasonable to expect that a surge that reached its full strength just in the middle of June.
Well, that's what you asserted, though. The administration asserted that's what they need. Let me ask a concluding question in my 19 seconds here. If, in fact, the circumstances of the ground are exactly what they are today, in March of next year, will you recommend the continuation of somewhere between 130 and 160,000 American troops being shot at, killed, and maimed every day there?
Mr. Chairman, that's a pretty big hypothetical.
Well, I don't think it's hypothetical. If they're the same.
I would be very hard-pressed to recommend that at that point in time.
Well, I would
obviously pray
you'd be wise enough not to recommend it and start to listen to General Jones and others who talk about a fundamental redeployment of our force, a fundamental change in our footprint in the region, and a fundamental alteration of our objective in moving toward a federal system. But my time is up. I yield to Senator Lugar.
Mr. Chairman, I express the regrets of Senator Voinovich in being unable to attend the hearing.
Senator Richard Lugar, Republican of
Indiana.
Funeral
with Congressman Paul Gilmore in Ohio. He sends his best to both of you gentlemen and appreciates your attendance, and ask that questions that he might ask.
Senator Lugar is the ranking minority member of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Critic of the war, very tough on the war.
General Petraeus, in the current Newsweek magazine, there's a description of strategy building in Iraq. The article is called Brainiac Brigade, and it discusses and compliments the officers that you have gathered around you, who at least beginning in meetings in March and perhaps thereafter defined a possible strategy of beefing up the local people. You have both mentioned this today, that essentially you try to find pockets of stability or near stability where ethnic cleansing has ceased, where at least violence appears to be lower or can be contained. And there appear to be responsible persons at the local or the provincial level who are prepared to take some responsibility. And at least according to the Newsweek article, this strategy won out over at least an argument that simply counterinsurgency of every insurgent everywhere be pursued, which was less practical than the one you apparently adopted. Now, building on that, essentially, David Brooks in the New York Times today, responding to the testimony of both of you gentlemen yesterday, indicates that this strategy of attempting to build the locals at least is making some headway. And even if the central government is not able to reconcile Shiites and Sunnis or various divisions, even among Shiites and so forth, locals are doing better at this.
He also, of course, mentions that in part one reason for the decline in killings in Baghdad and in those areas that were illustrated on the charts is that as many as 35,000 Sunni families have fled Baghdad this year. A good number of neighborhoods are more and more depleted of Sunnis. Some of your troops have built walls around various neighborhoods, as has been reported for several months, so the people could not kill each other as readily. And the question obviously is raised, what if you raise the problems of our enforcement before people have come to either a total cleansing of the situation or some reconciliation, which does not appear to be occurring in Baghdad. And the point is made, the president and his trip went to Anbar, not to Baghdad. Essentially, Anbar being perhaps a signal victory for localism. Now, what I want to ask you, I suppose, Ambassador Crocker, is just from the diplomatic standpoint, as you take a look at all of this, over the course of time, potentially, this is a strategy. It is clearly not one that anyone would have found it at the beginning of this situation, but perhaps one in which a good number of people are able to live and let live and govern themselves. We note the Kurds yesterday were dealing with the Hunt Oil Company. The Hunts are not drilling for oil yet, but nevertheless, they left well beyond the oil law, although they promised to distribute the money if any of it comes to it. In other words, are there possibilities in which you have these local situations that sort of contribute in a united way to the central government, feeble as it may be, inept and so forth, either for purposes of distribution or some sense of unity, or perhaps what some have called, is this going to be sort of soft partition? Not the three parts that were often mentioned, but multiple parts, all sorts of parts, as a matter of fact. And if so, can this be protected then by the diplomacy, which you mentioned may be instituted more forcefully with a regular secretariat meeting all the time, people rubbing shoulders rather than wondering who they're talking to, simply so they're not misapprehensions or miscalculations. The transparency, at least, of what is occurring might prevent invasions of others. With at least a minimal number of American troops there to keep the peace generally, to be a general referee of the process as the Iraqis work things out. Can you make any comment about this sort of general view of things?
Thank you, sir. I'd make two
Ambassador
two general
Ryan Crocker
comments,
responding to Richard Lugar.
First on what is going on or what may go on in Iraq. I would agree completely that we have to maintain an open mind, a minimum of preconceptions, an absence of U.S. models for what Iraq should be, and an awareness and readiness to respond to what may actually be happening on the ground that can take Iraq in a positive direction, whatever that may be. The Iraq of the future will definitely not resemble Iraq of 2003, and it may differ greatly from Iraq today. There is decentralization going on. There's no question. The role and power of governors and provincial councils, although not yet fully defined, is far in excess of what it ever has been. And I think that is a good thing. So the Iraqis, again, are going to need to debate these things for themselves at every level, and there have to be connections between the levels, and that's what I was referring to in my statement when I noted that we're starting to see a more robust debate on what the nature of federalism is, and we're starting to see it among Sunnis, which I think is a positive sign. So I think things can very well move in that direction, and if and as they do, we need to be there to encourage positive direction. With respect, again, to the neighbors and others, that is exactly our intent, to have a more intensive, more positive, more regulated engagement between Iraq and its neighbors. I think, for example, that it would be a very good thing if some of Iraq's Arab neighbors themselves decided to support economic development, say, in Anbar, now that you have a security environment that permits that. I also think the United Nations is now positioned to play a more active and involved role. As you know, the new mandate for UNAMI contains a number of additional areas, including those you touch on. They now have a mandate to support national dialogue and political reconciliation, to resolve disputed boundaries within Iraq, to promote regional dialogue, all with, of course, the permission of the Iraqi government, at the request of the Iraqi government. So I think, again, you have an Iraqi internal process, or in reality processes, that we have to be attuned to and encourage them to move on, but then a number of opportunities to support that regionally, bilaterally, regionally, internationally, and internationally with the UN mission in Iraq. So I think all of those come into play.
I thank you very much. I thank both of you for your service. America is fortunate to have such extraordinary leadership at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Dodd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And is that on?
Senator Christopher Dodd, another Democratic presidential contender.
All statements will all have to be included in the records.
Yes. Any opening statement that anyone would want to make will be placed in the record before the questioning begins.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll ask that be done. Let me join with the Chairman and you, General Petraeus, and, of course, expressing our deep appreciation for the men and women under your command. Whatever disagreements we have here about policy, I don't think you'll find any member of this committee or any member of this Congress, in fact, the constituents we represent, while there are disagreements and serious ones over policy issues, there is a deep and profound respect for the men and women who are serving in a very, very difficult set of circumstances. And I wouldn't want to begin any comments here without expressing that view. It's important. I think they understand that while we debate about policy questions, there's no debate about the admiration we have for the courage they're showing in these circumstances. There's a lot of debate. Obviously, there were reports about the data and the methods used for securing the number of statistics we're going to dealing with here regarding the level of violence in the area. I noted on the chart, General, that you showed, I think it was one of the first pages. I won't ask you to put it back up, but it shows the chart of the violence. I'm just curious. It shows here, actually, the surge begins really about February 1st of 07 on the chart, and that the numbers seem to come down, are already down, from the high mark earlier. Am I misreading that, or is...
No, that is absolutely correct. In fact,
Democratic Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut,
substantial drop in the month of February,
going
just
to the
with the announcement
statistics displayed on many charts around the hearing
plan.
Room.
In fact,
Senate
a number
Foreign
of,
Relations Committee,
we think Shia militia elements took a knee for a while to sort of sort out. I think they didn't realize that we did not have more than just the initial brigade on the ground. But there's no question that the ethno-sectarian violence had crested really in December and was headed down at that time, although still at very, very high levels.
Okay, well, I don't want to, because we can go around and debate the statistics here back and forth. The GAO obviously has a different set of conclusions, and there are others who argue about how well the surge is working in terms of the level of violence. But the whole purpose of it, of course, as you've been stating, and the ambassador has, is creating that space for the political process to move forward. Now, we've lost some 700 troops, among the 4,400, I think, have been injured in the time frame we've been there in this past eight months or so. I was at Walter Reed recently talking to a young man from Connecticut who lost his eye in Iraq. We'd go back, by the way, this afternoon. Not an uncommon reaction of people serving.
Senator Dodd of Connecticut, with his questioning there, referring to a young soldier who had lost an eye.
He said to me, Senator, we'll spend a month and a half to clean out an area. He said an hour and a half, and I'm quoting him exactly here, an hour and a half after we leave, maybe an exaggeration, obviously, after we leave, things are right back where they were before. He went on to say, look, the civilian population, and again, I'm quoting him, he said, they know where the IEDs are, they know where the ammo dumps are, they won't share that information with us.
Senator Christopher Dodd with a skeptical question from observation from a U.S. soldier that he had spoken with at Walter Reed. Barry Posen of MIT Security Studies Program joins me listening here, and Stephen Biddle, formerly of the U.S. Army War College, now of the Council on Foreign Relations. Stephen Biddle, we're hearing some of the details. Many more will be heard before this week is over. You said earlier you see a 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 chance of the very general outline of a future path here succeeding. That seems like a long shot by any measure.
How do we justify? Well, I think it is a long shot, and I think it's important in assessing this policy to treat it as a long shot. This whole thing is a question about whether or not, as a nation, we have enough risk acceptance to take a very long shot gamble as a way of preventing a really bad possible consequence. Potentially regionalization of the war in the worst case if the United States leaves behind an unstable Iraq. I don't think what we've got is either a guarantee that if we just show enough resolve we'll prevail, or a guarantee that this is a hopeless undertaking and no matter what we do we can't possibly succeed. I think what we've got is a tougher decision, uncertainty, and how in the world we come to grips with the cost of uncertain gambles.
Barry Posen, you heard Ambassador Crocker himself say there are no guarantees, as much as saying, yes, it is a kind of long shot here. Is this a risk worth taking for the United States at this point, given the strategic direction you see and what you've heard articulated today and yesterday? Do you see something resembling a path toward potential success emerging?
I don't see any path to success on the basis of what people are saying formally and explicitly. I don't think we're going to have, at the beginning of Crocker's testimony, he talks about a democratic, unified Iraq. Anybody who still believes in that, I think, is a fool. And I'm actually shocked that he even puts it in those terms, other than that he works for the president and those are the president's goals.
But the senators themselves responding, saying you're focused on local progress.
Well,
here.
The senator, what you're seeing here is the emergence of the alternative perspective on what are a set of reasonable political objectives in Iraq. And it's interesting that you see convergence from the two senior members of the committee, Republican and Democrat. And the convergence is that the United States should be leaning in the direction of a highly decentralized outcome in Iraq, not true partition, because nobody wants three real states, but for all intents and purposes, self-government on the part of the ethnic groups and on part of the provinces and the part of the different religions. That could be three big subgroups, sub-areas of Iraq, four, five, whatever it is, but that's the trend that Iraq's been going. And essentially, these senators are now saying we should pursue that trend, and they're hinting that the people in the theater secretly are pursuing the same trend and that the president doesn't really know it yet. And we'd all be better off if we admitted what exactly it is we're doing in Iraq and we're basically explicit about it and built a strategy inside Iraq and outside Iraq to move in that direction.
A disintegrated Iraq on the table for the decentralized at the very least. We'll hear more, I'm sure, across the country and throughout the day. Barry Posen and Stephen Biddle, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.